Today, we are skipping past what's probably the most painful part of the chapter for most of you, which is section 5, which is ice problems, doing mathematical problems with equilibrium. We are most certainly going to return to that because it's one of the most important types of problems you can do in getting ready for acid-base chemistry. But you probably have guessed by now that even though I do require you to do the math, I'm a big concept person, because if you can get the concepts well enough and then have the patience to learn the math, at least then you'll understand what you're doing in the math. So what I want to talk about today, conceptually, is something known as Le Chatelier's principle. And very simply put, it says this: if a system at equilibrium is disturbed, it will respond to that stress to return to equilibrium. There may be some more flowery, some more precise ways of wording it, but this is really it. If you have, let's say, a swinging pendulum, and you take that pendulum and you raise it up, you're putting energy in that system. Then when you let it go, it's going to go blip, 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 but eventually, it's going to settle back in equilibrium again, back where it started at its lowest energy position. Same thing in a chemical reaction, maybe not necessarily with so many swings in it. I said necessarily. So, say you have a reaction at equilibrium, and you suddenly change the amount of reactants and products that you have. Well, those reactants and products concentrations will change back in a way to get it back at equilibrium. Very simple sounding concept. Now, maybe as to help you all out a little bit with your three definitions that, oh, maybe could be on the quiz, hint, maybe I could talk about Le Chatelier's principle first from the perspective of those three definitions of equilibrium. Again, Le Chatelier's principle is not on the quiz, but that doesn't mean I can't use quiz material in a useful way. Here's a reaction where there's an overall loss in energy. We don't really formally know what delta G is yet, except you know this is energy thing, and we're losing it because the reactants are at higher energy than products. Because products are lower in energy, that's why equilibrium is here to the right-hand side, closer to products. And remember, there's this mythical reaction progress that's our axis that's not a very good axis if you really thought about it, because I should have just one variable. But it's a concept thing. 100% reactants converting to 100% products. So let's say we were at equilibrium and all of a sudden I dumped in a whole bunch of reactants. So, in this example, a reaction in which products are lower in energy starts at equilibrium But then, more reactants are suddenly added. So, if I wanted to put Q on this diagram, where would it go based off the description I just gave us? On the left, correct. Why? Because that's where more reactants are. So if you add more reactants, Q goes that way. So what can we say? So what are our three definitions of equilibrium? Well, one of them is that the rates of the forward and reverse reaction are supposed to be equal, right? If reactants are suddenly acted, or suddenly added, if reactants are suddenly added, the rate of the forward reaction will suddenly increase. But not the rate of the reverse reaction. So, more products must be made. In order for the rates to equal each other again. In English, the reaction moves forward. So, you might say that when you add reactants, you make products. And you might say, really, Dr. Gray? Wow! But no, it's more complicated than that because you had a reaction that was at a balance point. So now we're talking about why would it go forward? Because could it keep going forward past equilibrium? No, the story flips, but the story still ends up being the same, that it's going to want to return to equilibrium. So yes, the reaction moves forward, but for specific reasons, one of which is that the reverse reaction rate wasn't affected if you didn't add any products. So if you only added reactants, it's faster than the reverse, but that means you're going to make more products, and so eventually the rates are going to equal each other again. But that's just one of the definitions of equilibrium. So take your screenshots before we use one of the other ones.
When you say it's reverse and forward, is it you mean for forward is from left to right and reverse?
So, yes, we use this convention that we call something the reactants and we put it on the left, and we call something the products and we put it on the right. And you might say, well, what do we do if we reverse the two? Well, one of your sections in the text says, just take the inverse of your equilibrium constant. That's one of the sections we still have to play with, too. How do we manipulate equilibrium constants? But you define something as reactants, you define something as products, and so forward would be... let me give myself some room for this. Forward would be the top reaction going from reactants to products. Whoa. Try one more time. forward. And then products back to reactants would be the reverse. Now, what's one of the other definitions of equilibrium? Q is supposed to be equal to K, meaning no further change in the concentration of reactants or products, correct? So let's talk about that. What did I say here? If reactants are suddenly acted, this changes the balance of products and reactants in solution. This means that Q is no longer equal to K. The balance of products of reaction in solution is K. At equilibrium, the balance of products and reactants at equilibrium is K, and that's where we were, but we've changed that balance. So now Q is no longer equal to K. And specifically, Q is less than K. Why? Because we have a greater number of reactants compared to products. So, if reactants are suddenly added, this changes the balance of products and reactants in solution. Specifically, Q is now less than K. More products must therefore be made. For Q to increase again, or let me rephrase that, for Q to increase and again equal K. So now, there's one more definition, and that's the one that uses this equation where I related delta G and K. It's the equation you don't get until a later chapter, so I've been avoiding writing that equation down. But if we look at this graph, if I can move back, then you notice that the lowest energy point, the instructor remembers to put energy on his diagram, lowest energy point is where equilibrium is. Whether you go towards more reactants or towards more products, either direction is uphill in energy. So if reactants are suddenly added, up above I said this changes the balance of reactants and products. That means this changes the amount of energy present. If reactants are suddenly added, the reaction is no longer at its highest energy point, lowest energy point. And to oversimplify, reactants are higher in energy. Then products. More products must be produced in order to lower the energy of the system. Back to its lowest point. And just to help, Q and K are both always products over reactants, products over reactants. And let me just move this so I can add a comment. Because on the previous page, I said, blah, 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 blah. The reaction moves forward. What did I say on this page? Well, on this page, first I said, blah, 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 blah. The reaction moves forward. And then more boring, 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 blah, 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 blah. The reaction moves forward. Which is the really long, painful way of saying when reactants are added to a solution in equilibrium, they are consumed to make products. But you know, everything in these last two pages would be exactly the same if I was to remove products as they were forming. Because you're supposed to get it in equilibrium. And yeah, this is a favored reaction. But what if we had a reaction that wasn't quite as favored? Well, still, if we could form the products and then pull them out of the mixture, what would that mean? There's less products compared to reactants. So the logic's a little backwards, but if you remove products, you lower the rate of the reverse reaction, but not the forward reaction. So that means you're still going to move forward and make products. If you remove products, okay, so now you're lowering the numerator, the top part of the fraction. But if you added reactants, what you were doing is you were adding to the bottom part of the fraction. Same effect, though. You make Q less. You remove products, Q goes down. So you have to make more products for in order for Q to grow large enough again. And then terms of energy. Okay, products may be lower in energy than reactants, but 100% products is higher in energy than equilibrium. But that doesn't really matter, because if you're removing products, that's still like making too many reactants. And so it's still going to go uphill in energy. So all the explanations are slightly backwards in wording, but they all would lead you to the same point. If you remove products from a reaction at equilibrium, more products will form. Now, take your screenshot so I can write what I just said down. I'm not going to write the long, painful version yet. We might come back to that. But there's a practical application of what I just said that I'd like to talk about. So what I just said is the sort of the reverse of this. When products are removed from a reaction at equilibrium, more products will be formed as a result. And so Le Chatelier's principle, the way I said it was, well, if I can scoot back, I said, if a system in equilibrium is disturbed, it will respond to that stress to return to equilibrium. So what had happened here? It was at equilibrium and you disturbed it by removing products. Well, what would oppose that? Make more products. If you add too many reactants, what will happen? They'll get consumed because you added too many. What if you add products? Then it goes backwards because you added on the wrong side. What if you remove reactants? Then it also pulls it backwards. And it's all by the same kind of logic. This is, in its general sense, Le Chatelier's principle. Question. Okay, so let's talk about a few things. There's a statement you're not going to understand yet, but I just want you to get familiar with it early on. And it's this. The only factor that can change an equilibrium constant is temperature. To say slightly beyond that, the way to change the energy content as a system is by temperature. But as a very simple example, if the specific heats of the substances are not the same, that won't necessarily involve the same amount of energy. So, in other words, two different substances, because of their differences in specific heats, might undergo the same temperature change, but might not undergo the same energy change. So a change in temperature might affect reactants differently than it affects products, and so that will upset the balance between reactants and products, which means you change equilibrium. Or, as I said in the one-sentence version, the only factor that can change an equilibrium constant is temperature. The reason I make such a dramatic statement out of it is that there's the misperception that if you change concentrations, like the examples I gave up above, I added reactants, I added products, that doesn't change K, that changes Q. So changes in concentration will not affect K.
Professor Espinosa Scrollin.
Oh, then apply some energy and change its phase. There we go. So what the text does a sort of similar approach to me in that it gives a general statement for the Chatelier's principle, and it does an example with concentration. And maybe we'll walk through that example when we have a little bit more time, because it has an interesting graph that's associated with it. But there's some other more interesting examples that happen if we start talking about gases. All right, so let's move to talking about gases. And let me give you a specific reaction that we can talk about. So this is ammonia vapor reacting in a reversible way to fall apart into nitrogen gas and hydrogen gas. And, you know, there's this whole KPKC discussion that we had last time in lecture hint. And, you know, hint, if we had a change hint in the number of moles hint in products and reactants, then hint, the KC and KP would be different from each other hint. Maybe that has something to do with the quiz. I don't know. But let's say we were talking just about KC. Well, how would we write KC? It's concentration of nitrogen times concentration of hydrogen cubed, because there's a 3 stoichiometrically, divided by the concentration of ammonia squared, because there's a 2 stoichiometrically. Here's the question. What would happen if the volume suddenly doubled? Now, let's see if we can answer that one conceptually first. So, obviously, it's going to have something to do with concentration or pressure. They're kind of the same thing. Oh, what's the T? Spill the T. The T is just a boring, well, not so boring. It's good old Tazo organic chai. Because I'm too lazy to cook up the ginger and the black pepper and the cardamom and everything else you would put into a tea along with the milk and strain it and all that. So I'm aware of how to do it. I just choose not to. Oh, and there goes the iPad, because I was doing too much commentary. Wow. There we go. Okay, so what would happen if we suddenly doubled the volume? Well, if it's a pressure thing, that gives molecules more space to spread out, right? So wouldn't that mean that that would favor the side of the reaction where you have more molecules? Because if you suddenly decreased in volume, remember the Chatelier's thing, you're doing something that's in opposition. So if you increase in volume, suddenly the pressure drops. So how would it respond? Increase in pressure. How could it do that? Make more molecules. Let me just write down exactly what I said, because this is the qualitative way of explaining it. A sudden increase in volume would cause a sudden drop in pressure. This would favor the side of reaction, with more moles, since this would help increase the pressure again. So pressure drops for some reason, pressure's trying to increase. So I go, okay, that makes sense. Can we throw math at it? Do we have to? Yes. Take your screenshots first. So, what did we have on the previous page? Well, we had K. But if we are talking about a reaction that suddenly was disturbed from equilibrium, that means what we're really talking about now is Q. So QC, because we're dealing with concentrations, equals what? Well, now we've changed it to 1/2 the original concentration of nitrogen. Why 1/2? Volume doubled. What is mole? Oh my goodness. you know, mores. Just like we're going to talk about the morality of the solution instead of molarity. Yes. Okay, take your modified screenshots. Because I'll be elated to move on. I've just elevated the pun to a new height. Thank you.
Do you want something to drink?
So, back to this. One half concentration because we doubled the volume. One half concentration of hydrogen because we doubled the volume. But you see, there's a cube effect of hydrogen on Q. And then we have one half the concentration of ammonia, which has a square effect because science. So then what does that simplify into? That turns into one half times one half cubed over one half squared times this original expression of nitrogen times hydrogen cubed divided by ammonia squared, which means we get all this stuff on the left times KC, because that's the original expression here. This whole nonsense is the same thing as KC. So what we end up on the other side? Well, we end up with 1 half to the 4 minus 2 power, which means we end up with 1 half squared KC, which means 1 fourth KC, which means that Q is now less than K. So the reaction moves forward. Which is what I already said conceptually. That if you'd want to make more pressure to counteract the drop in pressure, move to the side of the reaction that has more molecules. And that's what the Q backs up. Now, if there's no change in the number of moles during the reaction, a volume change
is this supposed to be 1/2 to the 2?
Yep. So if there is no change in the number of moles during the reaction, a volume change will not affect equilibrium. Meaning Q will remain equal to K. And that's similar to what happens with the QP versus QC calculations. That the QP and QC are only different from each other if you have a change in the number of moles. Oh, I see why you're all looking at me funny with the equation. I left a square out. Thank you. Right there. Now it's correct.
I have a question about KC.
Sure.
Is it H3 and then H2?
Oh, my goodness. Is it spring break yet? All right, so we talked about concentration as one of the things that can have effect on equilibrium. And volume for gases can have an effect. Well, it will have effect on concentrations. Sometimes that also means it's going to have an effect on Q itself. Now, let's see what's next up in your text. We did the volume example. Ah, the change in temperature example. Oh, so, okay, this is where things get complicated. This is where I'm going to have to start breaking down and give you a preview of what's coming in the future, all right? You have Delta H, which is enthalpy, which my Chem 1A students, what is enthalpy?
The change in heat.
Kind of like heat, yes. Because if you go through the math and you go through all the scary differences of what enthalpy really is, and then you find out that it's really normally trivial in real life, the difference between heat itself. And in fact, given the way that we do most chemical reactions, it almost always works out in practice to work be kind of like heat. Enthalpy is kind of like heat. As Mutzi hits me over the head with the textbook. Okay. So we have these expressions of what delta H less than zero means, which is what? There's page four for whoever needed it. And back over here. Delta H less than zero means a reaction is... Come on, humans, you can do this. Exothermic, there we go. And then we have delta H greater than zero, which is endothermic. But here's the scary part. Delta G is made up of enthalpy adjusted for this thing called entropy. And there's a whole chapter on entropy. So before you start asking me, well, what? No, there's a whole chapter on it. I'm just giving you an example of something, okay? And I'm going to talk about this example for the 4 minutes or so I have left. If you take magnesium sulfate and throw it into water, it will dissolve and the water will get cold. If magnesium sulfate solid is added to water, it will dissolve and get cold. Does that mean this reaction is endothermic or exothermic?
Exo.
From what perspective?
The system releases heat and gets cold, so it's exothermic.
How can you release heat and make it get cold?
Because the heat is not in the system no more.
Well, if it's not in the system, if it was released to somewhere, something else got hot. What got hot?
Oh, yeah, right.
It's the opposite. It is endothermic. But that means the reaction's uphill, right? So why does it happen? Why does it dissolve? That's the big question. Why is it able to dissolve if the process is endothermic? And the answer is entropy. Entropy is more simplistically stated as disorder. But what it really is this. Things like matter and energy want to spread out whenever they can. You add a drop of food coloring to water, the drop does not magically stay there as one drop. There's nothing that can magically keep it all together. You shake the bottle up, of course that stuff's going to spread out, and eventually it's going to entirely spread out as much as it can. Is it possible that all those particles can condense themselves back into a drop? Yes. It won't happen in the life of the universe, but it is calculatably possible. But it won't happen. Why? Not favorable. Not, it would take coordination of energy. It would cost energy to do it. And that cost is entropy. So when magnesium sulfate you throw it into water, it makes a mess. The particles spread everywhere. That's the spreading of energy. That makes it favorable. Enough favorable that it counteracts the fact that the process is endothermic. Wait, how did we get here? Because of this whole QC thing that you can't see on the previous page because the iPad is not keeping up. But we were talking about K. And we were talking about temperature changes is what we were leading to. And if you can still see the iPad, let's see if it hopefully still keeps up. Nope. Okay, one second. So there, I just circled, is temperature. Notice that temperature is in this equation. Temperature affects delta G. Another equation, I said that delta G is related to K. So bounce from one concept to the other, that's why temperature is the only thing that can affect equilibrium. But this is all a very complicated argument. There's a much simpler one we're going to make next lecture, since I'm totally out of time. But I just wanted to make sure that I've given you a taste of the future so that when I give you the hand-waving explanation, you realize that's what it is.